Welcome to Listen To. This is Ted. The news was published on Tuesday, October 1st. Joining us today are Eric and Kate to discuss a recent outbreak of Marburg virus in Rwanda. Today we're discussing a recent outbreak of Marburg virus in Rwanda. Let's start with the basics. Eric, can you tell us what Marburg virus is and why this outbreak is significant?
Sure thing, Ted. Marburg virus is a nasty piece of work. It's a hemorrhagic fever virus that's about as friendly as a rabid raccoon at a picnic. This outbreak in Rwanda is raising eyebrows because it's unusually large. We're talking 26 infections and 8 deaths already, which might not sound like a lot, but for Marburg, it's like a family reunion gone wild. Typically, these outbreaks involve fewer than 10 cases, so this is definitely ringing some alarm bells.
While the numbers are concerning, I think it's important to note that Rwanda has a strong healthcare system that's well-equipped to handle this outbreak.
Hold up, Kate. I wouldn't call it fear-mongering. The WHO, you know, the folks who know a thing or two about global health, has categorized the risk of spread to neighboring countries as high. This isn't just a blip on the radar. It's a serious situation that deserves our full attention. We can't afford to sugarcoat it.
Sure. But let's not forget that Rwanda has been praised for its contributions to health security in the region. Experts like Craig Spencer have highlighted this. Rwanda isn't some backwater country fumbling in the dark. They've got their act together when it comes to healthcare.
Interesting points. Now let's discuss the potential impact on the region. Kate, what are your thoughts on how this might affect neighboring countries?
Well, Ted, I believe Rwanda's advanced healthcare system will help contain the outbreak. Their preparedness should minimize the risk to other countries. It's like having a top-notch goalie in a soccer match. Sure, the other team might take shots, but Rwanda's got the skills to block them.
I have to disagree. The high risk of spread noted by the WHO suggests that neighboring countries with less robust healthcare systems could be vulnerable. It's not just about Rwanda's
capabilities. But that's exactly why Rwanda's strong system is so important. They can act as a barrier to prevent further spread. Think of it as a firewall against the virus.
While that's optimistic, we can't ignore the potential for cross-border transmission. This virus doesn't respect national boundaries. It's not like it's going to stop at the border and say, oh, sorry, I forgot my passport. We need to be prepared for the worst while hoping for the best.
True, but international cooperation and Rwanda's experience can help mitigate those risks. It's not like we're starting from scratch here. We've learned a thing or two about handling outbreaks.
Let's hope you're right, but I think we need to prepare for worst-case scenarios. Hope is not a strategy when it comes to deadly viruses.
Now let's put this outbreak in historical context. Eric, can you tell us about a similar event from the past?
Certainly, Ted. This reminds me of the 1998-2000 Marburg virus outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo. It was a real doozy. Infected 154 people and killed 128, making it the largest Marburg outbreak in history. It's like comparing a house fire to a forest fire. Both are bad, but one's on a whole different scale.
While that outbreak was devastating, it's important to note how much our understanding and response capabilities have improved since then.
True. But the DRC outbreak shows how quickly these viruses can spread in regions with limited healthcare infrastructure. It's like a wildfire in dry brush. Once it gets going, it's hard to stop.
But Rwanda isn't the DRC. Their healthcare system is much more advanced now than the DRC's was in 1998. It's like comparing apples and oranges, or maybe more accurately, a bicycle to a sports car.
Interesting comparison. Kate, how do you think the response to this outbreak might differ from the 1998 DRC situation?
Well, Ted, we now have better surveillance systems, improved diagnostic tools, and more experience dealing with hemorrhagic fevers. The international response is likely to be much quicker and more coordinated. It's like we've upgraded from a flip phone to a smartphone. We're much better equipped to handle this now.
While those are valid points, we shouldn't underestimate this virus. Even with advanced systems, the 2014-2016 Ebola outbreak in West Africa caught the world off guard.
That's a different virus and a different time. We've learned a lot since then, and Rwanda is better prepared. You're comparing apples to oranges again, Eric.
Preparedness is good, but overconfidence can be dangerous. We need to remain vigilant. It's like thinking you're invincible in a boxing match. That's when you get knocked out.
Vigilance is one thing, but your doom and gloom attitude isn't helpful. We should focus on the positive steps being taken. You're acting like the sky is falling, Eric.
It's not doom and gloom, it's realism. History has shown us the devastating potential of these outbreaks. Ignoring that is like whistling past the graveyard.
Let's look to the future. Eric, how do you see this outbreak unfolding in the coming weeks?
I'm concerned we'll see a rapid increase in cases, possibly spreading to neighboring countries with weaker health systems. We could be looking at a regional crisis. It's like a stone thrown in a pond. The ripples could spread far and wide.
That's an overly pessimistic view. I believe Rwanda's strong response will contain the outbreak quickly, possibly within a month or two. You're painting a worst-case
scenario. That's overly
optimistic.
Even with a strong response, the incubation period and potential for undetected cases could prolong the outbreak. It's not just about the visible cases, but the hidden ones that could keep this going.
But early detection and isolation measures can significantly reduce transmission. Rwanda's experience with other outbreaks will be invaluable. They're not rookies in this game, Eric.
Interesting perspectives. Now let's consider the global response. Kate, how do you think the international community will react?
I expect we'll see a swift and coordinated international response, with WHO and other organizations providing support and resources to Rwanda. It'll be like a well-oiled machine, with everyone playing their part to tackle this outbreak head-on.
While international support is likely, bureaucracy and politics could slow the response. We saw this happen in previous outbreaks. It's not always as smooth.
But lessons have been learned from those experiences. I believe the response will be much more streamlined this time. We're not doomed to repeat the mistakes of the past, Eric.
That's assuming everything goes perfectly. In reality, there are often unforeseen challenges and delays. It's like planning a picnic and not accounting for rain. Things can go sideways quickly.
You're being too negative. The global health community is much better prepared now than in the past. Your pessimism isn't helping anyone.
Preparation is good, but we need to be realistic about the challenges ahead. Overconfidence could be dangerous. It's better to be pleasantly surprised than caught off guard.
Thank you, Eric and Kate, for your insights on this critical issue. It's clear that while there are differing views on how this outbreak might unfold, everyone agrees on the importance of a swift and effective response. We'll be keeping a close eye on developments in Rwanda and the international community's efforts to contain this Marburg virus outbreak. Stay tuned to Listen 2 for updates on this evolving situation.